most people don't, you know, get the privilege to write a philosophy book just because they feel like doing it, which in a vacuum is really cool. And I think you can scale that down to smaller things where I think journaling is probably the best example of that. I don't know many people that, you know, want to share their journaling. Journaling is kind of a practice that you kind of really do for yourself. And, you know, if I commit time to a piece of visual art, there's not a lot of things that I could picture myself wanting to create that I wouldn't also want to share. Like that overlap of what I want to make here in visual art and not want to share. When I make music, there's definitely music that I think is more emotional that I think could fall into like, I'm just making this for myself in a song, especially if you're like using vocals or lyrics, because lyrics and words become much more personal and much more emotional. And I think those things can be more affecting to the creator, and also less like beneficial to be into the public sphere.
How have you been, my friend? We were just before we started talking about how like that we met was somewhere in between 1 or 4 years, but we both have shit memory.
Yeah, I've been good. Just working on a million things. I'm sure you run into this where like kind of as you're kind of skill set grows and your kind of freedom to do what you want grows a bit more, you just find yourself biting off like more complicated ideas and you're like, oh, I'm still only one person with like as much speed as I had before. So like, but I'm having a lot of fun with it. So it's really cool just kind of trying to forge into new design areas, new technical zones, and I'm kind of in a bit of a more like muted color palette era now too. I'm trying to like, you know, I keep color palettes always keep evolving for me, so I don't want to be in the same way that I don't like being kind of like trapped into an aesthetic too much. I also don't like to be trapped into like a color scheme too much. I think I've done that a lot, so I really try to like kind of grow and evolve those things.
Yeah, you have a very distinct style, like very vivid, very like powerful, strong colors, bright, like brightness, a lot of contrast here and there, you know. There's kind of like a, I don't know how to express it, but there's kind of like a neon feel to it, even though they're like RGB colors, right? But the way you kind of mix them together gives that kind of very, very energetic vibe, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that's fun. And like, I think something that kind of like when you want to do like a print, you have to put it into CMYK.
Yeah.
And trying to find that. Yeah, but then it's kind of this whole new puzzle, and it's not bad or better or worse. It's just different. And it's like when you go into Photoshop, and what's the adjustment layer? There's one of them. What's it called? Channel mixer. But when you're in CMYK, when you're in like RGB, it's like red, green, blue. But when you're in CMYK, it's like cyan, whatever, and whatever. And it's this, this is like a different like trio of, you know, base colors that I'm working with here. So it's neat to find those challenges and kind of explore them.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you find that you like when you make stuff, do you aim it? Do you find yourself thinking about whether it's going to be aimed towards digital display or print?
Somewhat. Typically, like for most of my like MDJ kind of art arc, which I guess started in 2017, I was making all kinds of art before that, but that's when I like kind of created this persona and kind of built onto this specific aesthetic. It started off as being like, I'm going to like game theory Instagram as hard as I can to get followers, to get clients, to pay rent. That was like, that
Right.
was the workflow. It's like, go on Instagram, make something like, what will make somebody stop scrolling? Like, what's that image that you can get people to stop scrolling? So pretty much just grinding Instagram like a good little algorithm feeder that I was. So much of it, so much of the style was developed to be seen on an iPhone. Like that's the primary place where my, you know, the resolution, everything was kind of geared to, was like, this is where people will actually look at this stuff,
Right.
you know? So that's in a lot of ways where it has originally looked its best. And then moving to screens and printing and all that stuff, it's kind of this adjustment. I've got some posters that I'm prepping right now for a couple projects, and I'm realizing that like, oh, this just needs some grain. And grain is kind of weird digitally sometimes because, you know, you when it's smaller and bigger, you get these kind of distortions in the grain and fuzziness and weirdness, and it doesn't always like, it looks good on one screen, but not great on another screen.
Right.
And so then when you go to print this stuff, though, it looks really like digital and kind of like cold. But the grain can really help that. So when I'm thinking about printing, I'm kind of thinking about grain. And then when I'm animating stuff, it's more dynamic. Because for my art, sometimes I really want that just kind of paper 2D kind of feel. But sometimes it's adding some kind of like moving glows or some, you know, different types of, you know, effects onto things to give it a bit more depth in the animation. And again, when you're on a smaller screen, it's different than when you're on a bigger screen. My
Right.
biggest beef is that, like, you know, if I could put art on a, you know, a 60-inch Apple Studio display in people's homes, that would be the color profile that it's made in. And that's what it looks best in. But like, it's like, hey, I'm gonna put this up on a screen. It's like, okay, what screen? And exactly how is that calibrated? Because when I work in such a, it's such a delicate balance of colors that like the slightest change will piss me off to no end. So it's like screens outside of like Apple displays is just like the wild west of color, you know? So
Yeah.
it's tricky like that.
It kind of is. It kind of reminds me of the good old days of video games, working in video games and getting like screens calibrated because like you would have two screens. You would have your Cintiq and an other screen, you know? Little doggy wants to hear the story too.
Yeah, sorry about that.
What's his her name?
This is Diablo. He's
Diablo. All
a toy
right.
poodle.
Doesn't look like Diablo, but super cute Diablo. yeah, but you like you would work on the Cintiq, for example, and you would have like a reference screen, and you have to calibrate them to have same colors. 'Cause you'd be just like, oh, let me just move this reference image from here to here, and then the
Oh,
blue
I know.
becomes like purples. Like, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah. No, I know. It's always a challenge. And so I think for me, my like true north is the Apple screens at this point. And it's not even that, like, they are great screens, but it's not even that they're the best. It's just like a standard to have. And then I just know it looks good on that. And then outside of that, you kind of just have to relinquish a bit of control. But like in terms of like art in homes, I don't personally want any more screens in my life. I think making the digital art is great for looking at it in your browser. It's great for looking at it on your phone. It's great for that. And you know, but if I'm living with something, I want that as a print. That's how I want my art to live in people's homes. I don't want, like, pairing it with a digital piece is cool and great, and the animation can be exciting. But I don't want, like, all my art starts as a still frame. Animation is always the second idea. I always build it, and I rarely even, sometimes I consider what will be animated, but typically it's I build the idea without any consideration to animation, and then after that I animate it. So then I'm like, okay, what can I now animate in this? So the composition is always made free animation for me. So that's why, like, I'm not so precious about, you know, having the full animation be the expression of the art, because it's pretty much never the initial seed of the art.
So I think I agree with this too. Like I've used to think about animation clips. It's just something cool to look at. But the more, like, obviously, so last 3 years I've been kind of switching my focus. Just like yourself, I'm kind of very much always evolving, changing the way I like to do art and where I want my head to be at, you know. In the last 3 years, I was basically focused on more on directing and filmmaking, specifically in animation. Obviously, White Rabbit and all the other stuff I've worked on during that time. And I start to really believe in this idea that, you know, there's obviously two different mediums. So the stills and motion pictures, I think they just belong in different spaces, you know.
Well, yeah, like animation is something you engage with purposefully, but not constantly. You know, I'm sure like there's a million great stills in White Rabbit, which is really awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
But like all the work you do there, I'm sure if somebody was like, hey, I want something to live in my house from this, you would just go and pick three stills and be like, which one of these do you like? You know, not like, do you want a TV that plays a movie on loop? You know, like a movie is
Actually,
something you engage with purposefully.
quite honestly, I would probably like not pick a still. I would just like dig into a scene that I like and then completely pick it apart. And if it needs to be still, it just needs to look different because it's not made for still. All of it is made for motion, for specific action, cinematography, all that stuff, you know? Yeah, that's interesting. Because I know you did quite a lot of animations in the last few years. I, by
I
the way,
like
the way I discovered you was through Clubhouse. That was like the first time I actually seen your work. Like, because you remember that Clubhouse times, right? Like everything was kind of popping off, and you would just like start to hear different people talking. It's like, oh, cool. Let me check his work, and let me check this guy's work, you know? What was really interesting during that time is that it was almost to me like going from like art forums to Instagram, where it's like a completely different kind of cut of artists. And then like going from Instagram to Clubhouse and the NFT movement is like, oh wow, like I've never seen this guy's work. I've never seen this guy. It's like the world is so big and it's so small, you know? But I know like you've worked on quite a bit of animations, and it seems like you're kind of moving back towards stills. Like that's what we're like you feel.
Well, that's not how I
Like, I'm
feel
just
this last
curious.
month. If you're at my house, I've been doing a ton of animation. So that's definitely not, my actual reality right now. So I think probably the most frustrating thing to hear about my workflow is I do all of my animation in Adobe Premiere,
Yeah, when you told me, I was like, what?
which is like probably the dumbest thing I still do in my life. I should really
But it
learn After
works. Who cares?
Effects. It technically works. It's very limiting, but I think there's something that is kind of nice about the limitations because it kind of keeps me in this kind of papery, like all I'm doing is like keyframing like PNGs. That's what
Right.
all my animation is. Everything's just zoom in, zoom out, slide left, right, up, down. That's it. And so anything you could do with that, but it keeps this nice kind of like, I've never rotated an object in any of my animations, you know. None of my characters are built in 3D, you know, nothing is like that. So I think one time I did a cat in 3D. I have a cat somewhere in 3D that like wags his tail or something.
Okay.
It was the cat tail wag was really pissing me off. So I have a couple cats that I've done. But yeah, it's a slow and very frustrating place to work, but it really does kind of forces you to be creative within like limitations, which I think is, you know, can be good and it can just be stupid. So it's a mix of both.
Yeah, I'm curious what your take on just software in general, like how you look at it, because obviously, I mean, look, you could obviously argue that, yeah, you should probably learn After Effects or do this or maybe Blender, or, you know, there's like million advice someone can give you what you should do, but then it's just like it becomes, at least this is how I look at it from perspective of learning like all of those different things in my life, right? Like working in 3ds Max, Blender, After Effects, Resolve, working Houdini, like I kind of went through all of those softwares, and it's like at the end of the day, you might fall into a trap of learning software instead of making art, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't like I've done a couple small things in like Cinema 4D or like Blender before, but it's like just sometimes a couple little things that I want to try to figure out how to do or like, you know, trying to get like a different angle on like a 3D helmet and I'm like, okay, how can I get this angle on this thing, and I try to like go in there and rotate an object, and I'm just like screenshotting things because I don't even know how to export an image out of there. I'm just like a train wreck in those programs, so I have no like interest in learning those personally. I think at most I would learn After Effects, but like I know Photoshop. And I use Procreate on my iPad and Premiere, and I produce music on Ableton. So that's kind of that's what I know. And I'm smart enough to learn new software. I don't want to spend more time on a computer than I already do. So like I'm trying to, you know, make physical art as well. I've been doing like acrylic painting as well. And just my goal is to make what feels kind of the most me and the most interesting. And I think for me, diving into a very 3D technical world is just gonna put me in kind of like other territory that other people are just doing better than me. And I'm sure I could bring my own spin to it, but I feel drawn in a more analog direction than
Right.
going deeper. I always joke like I make art only in even dimensions, so only in like 2D and 4D, but I'll skip 1D and 3D. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I mean probably that's probably the best approach to be honest, because like from what I'm hearing, you only do art with the purpose. Like obviously sometimes we do art for fun, but you don't you're like you think about the outcome of it all first and then not really worry about what do you need to do to get there before your idea is conceived. Like you worry about that by like let me just exhaust. I'm just kind of reading how you talk about it. Like let me just exhaust what I already know because I can probably get where I need to go with this, you know, kind of
Yeah,
approach.
well, because I really just think for me, like my big influences are like, like comic books and stuff. And those kinds of things are just like the coolest thing to me is just like a really great image, like a still frame that is just like frozen in time. That is what, I find the most intriguing. And I just always am kind of just chasing what's the coolest image that I can create. And like, that doesn't mean I'm not like huge into animation and all that other stuff. Like, the dynamic movement of those things can be really, really engaging. So it's still both, but yeah, I could. My main kind of art obsession is just that moment, that still image for sure.
Makes sense. Yeah. And you said 2017 is when you like dove into digital art.
Not when I dove into digital art per se, but that's when I started the Mad Dog Jones
Right.
Instagram account. But
Right.
I've been like, and it's also when I got an iPad to work on. So before that, I was just working on like a Wacom, like not like a screen one, like just like the one that you have to like look at your screen.
The into us,
And
I think it's yeah.
yeah, whatever those little cheap little things are with the pens. And I was like trying to explore, different styles and, drawing stuff here and there and working on this and that. But the iPad with the Procreate was the big unlock for me, where, because when I was using the tablet without the screen and just looking up at the screen, I found my hand would really clench because like I was like, you're looking not at your hand, you're looking at the screen. And so it was a really tense process. So like I could actually only work for a couple hours before my hand would get really sore. But then as soon as I got the iPad, everything just relaxed and it all just opened up. And what, I started just kind of doing these like kind of small drawings on like a colored background. And then one day I was like, I wonder if I could just like draw like an entire background. And then I was like, oh, if you just take a couple of days, you can just draw the entire background. And then I was like, okay, if I'm just patient. And it's crazy because people are always like telling me, like, oh, so much detail. How do you have the time? How do you do that? And then I'll go look at a painter like Alex Gray and I'll be like, how the fuck do you paint this much shit? And it's crazy to me that he can do that. And then it's crazy to other people that I can do what I do. And it's really when you're in it, it's just about actually just doing it. It's just, if you spend just time doing it, it gets done. And then before you know it, it's there. And you're like, oh, cool. It's just done now. And it's kind of crazy. Even when I look back at all the stuff I've done, I'm always kind of surprised by how much there is. I'm like, wow, And like for me, I'm not using any 3Ds, all like hand drawn. So like every line is there by hand. So it's like pretty extensive work, but you just keep plugging away. Eventually you get a full piece.
Don't you think that line of questioning is like, how do you find time to do that, is related to the fact that art, unfortunately, in last two decades became sort of kind of a product that needs to be sold, and therefore people just try to do it faster, and that's super apparent in film production, by the way. Like, there's just no time to do anything. You just kind of have to, yeah, like, ideally photo bash stuff together or build quickly and not really focus on artistry but the functionality, which by the way it's by its own, it's like, it's, if it is its own kind of thing, right? Because it's meant for something more than just a pretty picture, right? Like, you're designing for something bigger.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's where it might be coming from, you know?
Well, like, you know, art under capitalism is, you know, that's just our reality. We live in a commodified society. And, you know, that's, it has some benefits and it has some drawbacks. One benefit is that, you know, we can pursue a career in art, and I guess, you know, for a select few, they can succeed. Like, you know, I've succeeded, so that's a benefit to me, I suppose. But, you know, the drawback is that, you know, most people don't get time to explore art, and we all feel this like the hustle and grind set kind of culture.
Yeah.
Is really, it's constantly pulling the joy out of art for artists, or it's trying to, at least. And I really try to find a balance in that. I don't really I travel and I go out of town and I'll, like, you know, go meet up with people and I'll go to things and I'll go to dinners and I'll, you know, go to the occasional like party or club. But like my day to day is very just chilling out in the woods, you know? And so finding that kind of bigger balance is really key, but it's also just like a massive privilege. Like, most people don't come close to having a fraction of the time I have been lucky to stumble upon. And, you know, that I grew up in an artistic family that had very, very, very modest means. Like, we didn't, you know, we weren't, we were a very happy, functional family, but we didn't have extra money. You know, I had to take out loans for school, and, you know, I was never had any extra wealth to go around. And I grew up in a family that we art was the family business. You know, we made stained glass windows and we did all these things. And so I learned a lot, and that was great to see that it wasn't about chasing big numbers in art. It wasn't about making huge amounts of money. What brings happiness is being allowed to create art, you know?
Mm.
And we were able to support our family off of art. And my mom would also teach as well. So there was a balance in where, you know, money was coming from, but we were able to find that balance, and it was a happy balance. And that's a really kind of important lesson to learn, is that it's, in the hustle and grind kind of culture, people are always chasing these big numbers. But really, the goal is to have time to create art on a regular basis. And if you can find any of that, then the happiness is right there. But trying to separate yourself from, because no matter how big of sales you can make, there's always that pull to chase that. That's always going to be there. Right. it doesn't like that doesn't change. It's just proportional. So it's like finding a way to calibrate yourself to just make art that you like and consistently make art is really the goal, I guess. But it's coming from such a like a lucky and privileged place that I have, so it's kind of hard to scale.
I mean, you sound really grounded when you're talking about it. You know, like I obviously didn't know you before your, because you got quite a few big sales yourself, you know, specifically in like NFTs, and then after that, and it's, you know, there's, I would say there's only a handful of people that I know that managed to get really up there, you know, whether it's a big sale, like success and whatever, and kind of remain, yeah, like this guy is chill, like always nice to talk, super grounded, you know, that kind of stuff. Like you, my friend Ash, Beeple, Mike Winkleman, yeah, maybe a few more that I forget, but those guys, even though they made like massive projects, you know, they just didn't change.
They're, yeah, well, I think a lot of it is who you surround yourself with and like where you kind of where you kind of land out of all of that. I made a pretty conscious decision to stay in my kind of small hometown. So, you know, having friends around you that will still like make fun of you and all that, I think is like the community that holds you accountable. Like I can't, like if I showed up driving some sports car to like, you know, go play like frisbee golf with my friends, they would just make fun of me. They wouldn't be impressed by
Lambo.
Yeah, that's like not even like on the table. So I think finding those, like being like lucky enough to have a community that can, you know, kind of keep you in check is really what a lot of that's about. But I think just the bigger picture though is to not lose sight of, even if it's just like a little bit, even if it's just like a seed, like a little flower or a little like sprout that you just keep alive, is just keep making some small amount of art on the regular that is just for you. Mm. Just keep that, like that hope alive. And it doesn't have to be like a lot of time. It's like when people talk about like meditation or yoga or journaling, like you don't need to do 2 hours of meditation a day. You don't need to do 2 hours of yoga today. You don't need to do 2 hours of journaling a day. All those habits that are really good for you, you just need to do a little bit to just keep remembering that that's there. And you'll have times where, you know, it'll collapse and you'll binge watch fucking Survivor for a week and not get any art done. But then you'll have other times where, because you were keeping that alive, you'll spend a week that you have some time really just like digging into this idea that you really like. And the more you can do that, the more it stacks and you keep building it. Like the flywheel or whatever kind of example you want to use for that.
Do you keep a lot of art just for yourself? Like, I know, like, obviously you gamify your Instagram in pursuit for work. It's like, I need to get some money. I'm going to fucking play this game, get a recognition and get there. It's kind of interesting how it cascaded to where you are right now, because I'm pretty sure a lot of it kind of started with Instagram, but a lot of it then cascaded to a completely different route. But even now, do you make art just for yourself? Like, I'm not going to show this to anybody. This is just for my soul.
Not show it to anybody. Sometimes, but like, I don't think that not showing it to anybody is the same as not making it for profit. Those are two
Right,
different
okay.
things, you
Yeah,
know, like,
those are
because
obviously two
like
different things, yeah.
I really think sharing your art is actually important. Of course, you can make something that's just for yourself that you never share. That's fine. But if you there's kind of this intersection here. There's making art for yourself, which is like good for your soul, and it's like a practice that is helpful. And if that art is really personal and you don't want to share it, fine, that's cool. But there's making art for yourself and then sharing that art to get feedback, because without that feedback, it's really hard to actually kind of grow, I find. You can just kind of like, you can settle into something that's interesting, sure. But there's then, so there's art for yourself, but then, well, what if I want a career out of this? And I think the best way to make a career out of art is off of the core skill set of art for yourself. Because like your
Yeah,
own
I agree with
taste
that.
and your own personality is your resource that you have an infinite amount of. So like exploiting your own taste and curiosities is like your best resource. So I think you make art for yourself as like a core principle to live by. But if you want to leverage that into a career, then I really think it's actually really important to be constantly sharing it. I mean, not constantly. Constantly is kind of a slippery word, but regularly sharing it to get feedback on it to then kind of grow your practice and build your skill set. Like, I think it's most apparent with music because I've been in the music industry a bunch too. And like, I'll make a beat at home and I'll be listening to it and vibing to it and loving it. And then I'll play it for somebody else and I'll be like, yeah, it's fucking shit. I know it's shit. Don't worry about it. I know it's bad. And then you go back and you change a bunch of stuff and you're like, okay, now I might have it somewhere better. But it's crazy how much once you show something to somebody else, how your perception of it can change. Because you're like,
Yeah,
okay,
for
now
sure.
how has somebody else seen this? Are those flaws that I'm, or am I okay with those flaws or not? Sometimes flaws in art are amazing, and sometimes they're just lazy. And so all that stuff kind of comes into focus once you've got other people's eyeballs on it. And
Right.
I don't even think it's necessarily the other people's feedback that you need to primarily pay attention to. It's just how you feel knowing that it exists in the world changes your perception of it, whether you read
Right.
the comments or not.
Sure.
So it's not about, because like you also have to sift through like people just bullshitting and being like, oh, I love it. Like, do you really? I don't know. You know?
Oh my God, I love it. Three hearts and hands up. No, yeah, there's that too. And then there's also just like the reaction you get from people might cause you to think about your art differently in a positive and negative way too, you know. It's like, I was not expecting that that's going to be a reaction, you know. But you know, the reason I asked you this, it's because I've kind of like asked that same question that on the topic we're on to myself recently, where it's like, what if I just made something just for myself and nobody else? And what sparked this idea was I've been reading Meditations from Marcus Aurelius, and that book is based, I mean, it's basically kind of a collage of his notes that he basically wrote for himself and never intended for anyone else to see it, you know? And it's kind of interesting, like how much very interesting kind of introspection is there. And I wonder if like if he ever looked at the notes he wrote to like retro introspect on upon his own thoughts, you know, and his own kind of thinking years later, let's say. You know what I
Yeah,
mean,
sorry.
so
I feel bad with the dog barking. No,
it's all good.
absolutely. I have a lot of thoughts on that particular book. It's I bring it on my fishing trips with me. And so when we're all like in the fishing boat, I'll just like randomly flip through it and like read it at people.
That's Oh my God.
So
That's a, by the way, it's like
yeah,
a super hard book to read. It's like you read a page, it's like, hold up. Like, I need to read this again, right? It's so dense.
I think sometimes I'll like replace like nouns with like fishing words, you know? So like, you know, kind of have some fun with it. Yeah, I think it's a, you know, it's definitely one of those books that you get a lot of people like being like it's the most important book of all time or whatever. It's my Bible. I think it's a really interesting way to look at it as a piece of art that was just made for somebody, because I think that's what's so intriguing about it is that it's not dogmatic and it's not
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with
implying
that.
that you have to follow this to be a better person. But the unintended consequence of it is it's a great way to learn how to be a better person in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
And, you
there's a
know,
lot of good nuggets there. Like you read is like very interesting. Very
It's
kind of
like it's
selfless.
yeah. It's
Yeah.
almost like startlingly unproblematic too, which is like weird because you read something so old, you expect it to just be like ripe with misogyny and, you know, all kinds of classist, you know, bullshit. But when you actually read it, you're pretty much like, oh, like this is pretty, you know, pretty balanced. You know,
Yeah.
these thoughts are very modern in a lot of ways. Yeah, so
Yeah,
it's
it
an interesting
definitely
book for sure.
s a lot of passages from that book stood a test of time. Like they it's almost like you could look at it from a perspective of like it's like, you know, it's like perspective, color balance, complementary colors, like those things kind of stand the test of time, you know? So like some said truths, let's say, that no matter if it's 100 years from now or 500 years ago, they still ring true because they're like close to human nature, I would say. But yeah, I agree. I agree. It's like to me, I don't think there's any book that could be treated as dogmatic per se. I don't think there's any art, any person, or anyone that should be treated that way, like in the dogmatic way, right? To me, books are kind of, and films to a degree as well. There are films that have some traits that stand the test of time. You know, when you watch some of the older movies, and like I've been recently watching Jurassic Park, one of like all-time best movies, right? And there's a couple of
The CGI
scenes.
still holds up. It's crazy how good the
It's
CGI is in
crazy.
that movie.
You know that scene with T-Rex when he opens his mouth and there's a flare, red flare casting shadow into his mouth. You pause that frame, it's like, this looks so real. Like, this looks better than any CGI these days, right? But even just like from the storytelling point of view, acting, the way camera moves, it's like, oh my God, it's amazing, right? It's a movie that was made, what, 30 years ago? And you watch it, there's still kind of like the morale of it all that kind of ri still rings true. And you can still relate to the story, right? And there are movies like you watch, I don't know, like Predator or even like Aliens. And it's like, yeah, it's an awesome action flick, but it's like, there's so much cringe shit compared to like current times, right?
No, definitely. Yeah, I think it's the fact that Jurassic Park, I think Spielberg just has a more kind of family-oriented
Yeah, for sure.
kind of persona to his movies, kind of across the board. Like, even if you go back and watch, like I watched True Lies recently and was just startled by how fucking like just terrible of a relationship Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis have. Like he like kidnaps her, then like makes her strip for him when she doesn't know who he is and she thinks she's being like assaulted. And then like a guy kidnaps her and like pistol whips her, and she's doing it all suddenly. You're just like, James Cameron, dude, like what the fuck is this script? Like it's nuts. And you know, it's a great action movie, but I know what you mean. Like it's like cringe or just like weird and like unrelatable now. But when you look at a Jurassic Park, you're like, oh no, these motivations, you know, like you have the businessman, you have like the Newman character, you have, you know, the pure scientists, and then like the raw emotion of the children and like the grandfather, and like you have all these motivations that feel like these real like archetypes that are just constant in society. All like, you know, like you have, it's almost like you like crafted like the, yeah, the seven deadly sins or something. Not exactly that, but there's these kinds of characters that you build in this world that really kind of illustrate something. And I think Spielberg is so good at keeping it archetypal and keeping it kind of, his movies stand the test of time quite well. Predator is still a really fun movie to watch, though.
It is a fun movie to watch, yeah,
Predator
for
is
sure.
great. R.I.P. Carl Weathers. Yeah.
It is super fun to watch. But that's basically what I'm saying is I feel like there are certain things that were done at the time that they are pieces of art for that period of time. You know what I mean? And a lot of books are that way too. And I feel like even meditation is this kind of book because you read it, it's like half of the passages there is like it's very hard to read because they're so unrelatable, you know? They're like talking about slavery and this and that. It's just like I cannot relate to that. This is like 2,000 years ago. Like, how am I supposed to fucking relate to this, right? Completely different times. The entire Earth's mindset was completely different, you know? And I'm not gonna sit here as like, I know better in 2024, you know, than the fucking, you know, it's like, all right, chill. But there are those passages that are like, very interesting. Like they kind of, you know, but to me the most interesting part about this book was the reason why he wrote those things, right? Like he wrote it just for himself, with zero intention to show it to anybody else, you know?
Well, you know, that's kind of like the privilege of a king, right? You know, like, or an emperor or whatever he was, you know, most people don't, you know, get the privilege to write a philosophy book just because they feel like doing it, which in a vacuum is really cool. And I think you can scale that down to smaller things where I think journaling is probably the best example of that. I don't know many people that, you know, want to share their journaling.
You're
Journaling is
right.
kind of a practice that you kind of really do for yourself. And, you know, if I commit time to a piece of visual art, there's not a lot of things that I could picture myself wanting to create that I wouldn't also want to share. Like that overlap of what I want to make here in visual art and not want to share. When I make music, there's definitely music that I think is more emotional that I think could fall into like, I'm just making this for myself in a song, especially if you're like using vocals or lyrics, because lyrics and words become much more personal and much more emotional. And I think those things can, A, be more affecting to the creator, and also less like beneficial to be into the public sphere, you know. So in terms of visual art, I don't know if I'll really create much for myself, but in terms of writing or music, I think that's the area where I would find myself creating just for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, journaling example is actually very good. I did not think about that. Where a lot of people actually do write for themselves. They just are not Fucking Roman emperors. Yeah, that's true. I want to go back a little bit, like pull back a bit and go back to your art and your especially the last few years, because I think I'm well. There's a couple of questions that I have there, which were I think were kind of stepping stones in your career in last few years of your career, right? It's like, what pulled you into the NFTs, like to the whole NFT? Because you I think you started with the NFTs a little sooner than, if I remember correctly,
Yeah,
than the whole hype, the NFT hype started, right?
I started in 2020, so
Right.
that would put me on like the I think like if you're talking volume of NFTs out there, it's in the 0.00000001 zone of quantity. But yeah, so it was on the I started right when like essentially when Beeple started. I think I had a drop on NG like a week or two after him. It was like me, Fuo, and Beeple were like 3 consecutive weeks. And I was the 3rd week. So I think it was like Beeple, Fuo, then me, or something like that. But we were all within like 2 weeks of each other, our first drops. So we were kind of all in that little group there. Just kind of randomly, I had a buddy message me in the summer of that year, or maybe spring. Sent me a super rare link, and I looked at it, and I sent it to my manager and my business manager, and I was like, "Is this legit? Like, could I be selling digital art online?" And so we kind of just like planted the seed. Kind of in my brain, I kind of like just started wrapping my head around it in the spring of that year, I guess. And then by the fall was when me and Beeple did our Nifty Gateway drops, and then it was the next January, February, March where everything kind of went haywire.
Yeah, it truly exploded like in Mar like February, March. Yeah.
I think
Was there anything
there was like an
specific about the NFT itself, or was it just like, what was your thinking process?
Sorry, what do you mean specifically?
Like, 'cause NFT, I mean selling online, like online, you could sell like prints or like have Patreon. Like there's like kind of analog, let's say, ways of sell digital art online, right? I wonder, was there like anything very specific in
I think what
the
was
NFT
cool
itself?
was the idea of, because like me, Slime Sunday, Beeple, Victor Mascara, Fuck Render, Aphoria, we kind of all were friends before all this, online friends.
Right.
I knew some of them in IRL and some of them not. But like we all like we would vet clients online to each other and be like, "Oh, did you work with, so and so company?" Or like, "Oh, this creative director said they worked with you or knew you. Do they actually know you?" Or like, "This person said you're in on this project. Are you actually in?" So we're always, oh man, me and Fuck Render have had some epic people trying to like leverage our names to get us both onto projects, but don't know we know each other. And it's like, so I know you're lying to me, and we both know, and we're both out. So yeah, lots of stuff like that where, we kind of had each other's backs and kind of like had been, I think like Beeple and Slime were both people that kind of like reposted me or followed me when I was just starting out, and it really kind of gave me a boost. And then, there's just kind of all these different dynamics of all of us kind of helping each other, sharing each other's work. So what was cool about NFTs was this idea that this kind of collective, if you want to call it that, or I'm sure there's a more like art word for it, of artists, a loose collective, because we weren't specifically bound together, but would have a moment where, you know, they could be recognized. And I think everybody now realizes, like, Beeple deserved to be recognized. He had been doing frontier artwork for years.
Yep.
And it wasn't recognized by any, like, buddy other than, like, nerds on Instagram, which I think are a very valuable sect of society. But
it was limited to that. Pretty successful before, and I mean, you've known him for a while, within
a group of people, you know, like he would go to things and he would do his like live digital things and it'd be big and people would like, you know, he was very revered in the community, but like it was that, like, you can, like, he's literally like a household name now, you know, and the idea that we could move from being just Instagram kind of hustlers to actually being artists that could sell their art in the form that it was created was a very promising idea and is the core idea of what I still like about the world, because I'm not a crypto maxi, you know, I don't, collect coins, you know, I don't invest, like, you know, I don't buy meme coins.
You don't invest in the shit and a half coin?
No, I don't. And because that's, to me, that's a job. If you want your job to be halftime artist and halftime investor, that's cool. That's great. If you have the brain for that. I'm not an investor, you know, I'm more efficient at making money, making art, you know, and I only have so much bandwidth. So I think that there's people that their art relate to the crypto sphere more and that it helps their art to actually be like interwoven in the fabric of, you know, the memes and all that stuff. And that's cool because it can be part of your artistic journey. I think like one of my like really good friends, like Fuckrender, is a really good example of this because we both have very similar, you know, artistic eyes and tastes. And we both kind of like really like do super similar things emotionally and artistically in a lot of ways. But he kind of builds his art through the story of the larger kind of Web3 technological narrative, which I think is really brilliant. And it takes a lot of investment of your intellectual power into that sphere. You have to really like choose to dive in and understand it. And if you have the brain for that, then that really feeds into your art. And that can be really like, really just compelling. And you become part of that story in a different way. For me, Web3, NFTs, blockchain is a function for digital artists to be recognized and get to tell bigger stories. But my artistic story is more about artists getting to express themselves and, you know, live fulfilling lives by getting to make more digital art than it is about the larger arc of crypto.
Right. That makes sense. It's more of a medium of expression rather than specific technology that gives you A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know?
Yeah. Well, like that's kind of what Replicator was really kind of illustrating. Like a photocopier changed how you can make art. You can make prints. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I see NFTs like I see a photocopier. A very important piece of technology that can be very influential to art. And
Yeah.
there, it's a cool piece of technology, and that's what it is. And I think it's important to have a relationship with emerging technology as an artist. And that's kind of how I kind of slot into that whole world. And I think it's also just attuning to your own brain patterns. My brain doesn't pattern in charts and numbers and, technical stuff really well. I'm visual, I'm emotional, I like telling stories. And I think we're similar in this way, where it's like, the technical stuff, some people relish in the technical stuff and some people tolerate the technical stuff. And for me, I'm
Right.
like, I'll go through the technical stuff if I have to get to where I want to get to, but like, it's not the goal. The goal is the emotion and just the simplicity, because I sometimes wish I could do more technical stuff, but I'm just kind of a moron. And so I think when it comes to technical work, I'm your average user, is kind of what I always describe myself as, which is
Right.
fun working with Manifold, because I'm really great for them as a test person, because if I can figure it out, the product is good. And if I can't figure
Right,
it out, the
yeah.
product is bad. I think I'm like right at that like line. It's like, I should be able to know how to use your product. If I don't know how to use it, it's bad. But yeah, so
That's a
I'm
good
right on
litmus
that
test,
edge of
yeah.
like,
Yeah. It's good for the UX UI team over there. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
how do we make Misha happy?
Yeah,
If you
can
can
he
make
do
him
it?
happy, most people will get it.
Yeah.
That's fucking funny. Yeah, I've joined the NFT, like I've my interest in NFT. I've heard about it when Beeple started making his drops, but I was just like never I think I was just so busy with just generally production work and like this fucking film grind, working in film games, just kind of constantly grinding, that my brain capacity to recognize interesting things was kind of very limited, right? And then when it became more popular, it actually caught my radar. To me, what mo the most interesting thing about the whole technology is the provenance, basically, and sort of like how the blockchain allows you to kind of verifiably say this comes from this guy or this person, right? I think that's sort of like the number one kind of thing that mattered to me.
That's all it really is,
Right, yeah.
and that's it's just that one important thing is what, because that's what allows something to be sold, right?
Yeah.
And that's really cool. And then I guess the second layer to that is, what mechanisms you can create with smart contracts. So there's provenance,
Yeah.
and then there's smart contract. And again, back to Replicator, like it's a piece of art that has an image that represents, or a series of images that represent, a story of technology, and it's using smart contract mechanisms to tell that story.
Yeah.
So, those are the kinds of things that I find compelling, is how can this technology be used to actually tell an artistic story in an artistic way. And the provenance is kind of the core tenant of that whole superstructure. And then around that is like, can you derive weird things off of this and kind of create an even cooler story?
Yeah, even before Replicator, you did the whole burn with Nifty Gateway, which was like unheard of back then. You know, everyone was just like doing drops and doing drops and doing drops, and this guy comes and is like, I'm gonna fucking burn my art, dude.
It was the first burn art drop ever, which I'm
Yeah.
not big on the first evers, because I think they're kind of whatever, doesn't really matter. But like, it is interesting in kind of when you get into the you know, like I was talking to Roger Dickerman about this, who is just, I don't know if you follow Roger very well, but he's doing lots of really, really cool stuff. And kind of keeping
need to check him out.
Yeah. So he's got his new project, the art project he's doing. I believe it's called 24 Hours of Art. Apologies if I get the title wrong, but he's just kind of cataloging stuff in a really interesting way. And, you know, when you talk about, like, you know, it's almost like, what's like a hall of fame of art, you know, like, I guess in a lot of ways, that's like what museums are, but there's certain things that happen that are just part of the overarching story.
Right.
And I'm always super grateful that, like, especially, you know, kind of getting in with the Manifold guys right from the start and kind of building with them, because, you know, they really, together we opened a lot of doors for each other. And I think that it's really exciting to know, or like, I feel really blessed to know that I got to do some of these kind of like groundbreaking things in an art movement, is pretty cool. And, you know, it's a flawed movement though. It's, there's a lot of weird, dumb shit that goes on too. So like, you know, like it's a work in progress, you know, and everything is going to have, you know, people that come in, you know, art world, music world, there's always going to be snakes and ladders,
yeah,
you know, folly and turmoil, and it's trying to navigate this kind of crazy world that we're living in as an artist is always a challenge, and trying to like find your kind of community within that and making sure that you're kind of like holding on to a purpose within that as well.
Yeah. The NFTs went through, I mean, it almost became like a radioactive, you know, acronym in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I think,
you know,
it'll
like,
have its own resurgence, yeah, though. But in maybe a little different form than what people recognize it as to be, right?
Yeah, there's, you know, I think the reality is like, there's a nuanced kind of deeper conversation. Like if I have a conversation with somebody who's like, you know, critical or doesn't understand or thinks NFTs are like garbage, I can have a conversation with them and explain things where they'll go, oh, okay, well, no, that's interesting. Like, you know, like nobody, yeah, will, it's not anybody that I've described Replicator to that they're like, okay, that was the problem, you know?
Yeah.
and, you know, most people's impression of NFTs are apes or something, right? And, yeah, you know, there's cool people that hold apes, but there's also really cringe people that hold apes, you know?
Right.
There's a lot. And like with a lot of these areas, it's not about art. It's about, you know, it's like, you know, a digital Rolex, right? Like people call CryptoPunks like a digital Rolex. And it's like, well, cool, but I don't give a fuck if you have a Rolex, you know?
Right.
It's cool. Like, sure. Like if that makes you happy, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it, but that's not like where I find my purpose and meaning in life isn't from a Rolex. And I don't see somebody with one. If it looks good from a fashion sense, then I like it. But if it looks bad, mm-hmm, then it looks bad. You know, I think yeah, I don't really have a problem with expensive fashion if you have disposable income, but like if you have like a big gaudy watch, you know, or if you have like a really ugly profile picture, like I don't think that's cool if it's ugly, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
if you're wearing,
so, you know,
Crocs.
I'm not wearing Crocs right now, but you know.
No, I mean like combination of two, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. The paradox, the Crocs paradox, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's yeah, it's definitely interesting. I feel like it's gonna have its own resurgence. It just needs to go through, like it needs to wash away all the turds that kind of latched onto it, you know? It's gonna take time. I think people might recognize the benefits of blockchain more and more, especially with like the resurgence of AI and how AI is like slowly but surely creeping in, and I think like mentally polluting humanity, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
So it's gonna be interesting to see how things develop, you know, on that front.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that I established a career and a style before AI.
Right.
You know, it's like,
Yeah.
because I don't, it must be so daunting to be an artist kind of just kind of coming into your own now. Because, like, you know, it's so easy to, you know, create just instantaneously that, you know, I don't know what, you know. I think they're
Yeah.
interesting tools. I'm not even like if I had a button that was like push this button and it like destroys AI for all time, I would just push the button. I don't think it's really a net benefit to society or a net benefit to art or expression in any way, but it does exist.
Not
And there
in the
are
current form,
interesting
I
things.
would say.
There are interesting things that can be done. It's not like there's nothing cool that can come out of it. But I think for a young artist, not learning how to make art from a more natural way, I think will really limit the joy art can give you,
Yeah,
because
it's
that's like it's more about like the lost joy of making art that I worry about. Less like obviously like people like you know like you know especially like people like storyboard artists or people there's like people that will like you know just effectively like be pushed out of their daily work, which is shitty, which is not like what
which is already
I
happening,
hope for
yeah.
anybody. Yeah, no, which is
Yeah.
already clearly happening. And like, you know, like I'm, you know, like what's my job or purpose? You know, I could go on AI and make 500 Instagram pages that look just as good as mine in a few hours. You know what I mean? So like, what does that mean? I don't know. But I think the scariest thing is people losing the joy of the process and the struggle of actually creating art. And then, you know, you make something and it's like not as good as if you just made it in AI is also really daunting. It's like, well, I made this cool thing, then somebody in your class is like, beep, 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 beep. Yeah, but like this one's cooler. And it's like, well, shit. But like that was never anything we had to contend with growing up. You know, it'd be like,
Right.
oh, I drew this cool thing. It'd be like, oh, cool. You know, and like you were contending with like, you know, Todd McFarlane or something, but not fucking Todd McFarton in like the desk next to you.
Yeah, the most discouraging part about it is that most, I would say, vast majority of artists need to go through the period of time where they get influenced by other artists and they learn by looking at other art and looking at influences. And through the process of trying to achieve that,
Yeah.
they kind of you kind of mentally recognize that that's not necessarily the route I want to go. I want to create my own voice and therefore experiment. But you'll never get
Yeah.
that realization if you don't try, right? And
Yeah.
so I think the process, I totally agree with you in terms of the joy of making art. The real joy of making art is the process of realizing your mistakes, trying and failing, and then creating something that you feel is new and fresh, you know, and something that kind of speaks your language, let's say. But how are you supposed to speak your language if you haven't learned it yet, you know? Like you need to learn your ABs and Cs. And then, like, combine them together into words to figure out. Like, you need to learn the vocabulary to then figure out if there's a new word you can discover that
Yeah.
nobody's using on the daily basis, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and like for me, like I've explored AI, and I think it's for me, I think there's like interesting tooling you can do
I
once
agree.
you've understood your own style. It's like
Yeah.
it's like a great power, great responsibility type of thing where it's like, okay, I've developed a style. I know what I want something to look like, or you know, I just need a different angle. I need a different reference angle for like this mailbox. You know what I mean? There's stuff like that where you're like, you know, okay, how do I, you know, do this thing that I could figure out? You know what I mean? Or like, how do I, you know, I want some like wet texture on this road. I took this picture and it wasn't raining out, and I want some wet texture to get some good light reflections, you know, and like you can like do that, and then it's like then the art that comes out of it is very much still your art, and it's just like
Yeah.
these like you know these calculated derivations within your own style. And I think it's like a it's kind of like when we were growing up, like you know like you'd find like a nudie magazine and you'd be like, oh okay, like oh there's boobs in an old like 70s Playboy. And it's like, whoa, you're a kid and you're like, whoa, crazy. And it's kind of like now, like kids grow up and they have access to the internet. And it's like, whoa, that's like way more than, you know, like anybody should be like growing up seeing, you know?
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
obscene and like it's dangerous even for like a fully formed brain, but like especially for somebody that doesn't understand, you know, society's dynamics. And I think
Right.
AI is a lot like that. It's like it can be really toxifying to an adult brain who's fully formed and responsible, but to somebody who's still growing, it's just gonna be like brain rot.
Yeah.
So I think it's really dangerous. And I think it's kind of like I think AI will be looked at closer to a drug than a technology in the future, where it'll be like
That's interesting, yeah.
you'll become addicted to it and dependent on it in a way that will be closer to how we look at alcoholism or you know nicotine or something. And I think you know a beer can be nice and a beer can loosen you up and a beer can lead to good times and it's okay to have some beers, but you know if you're drinking beers in the morning and then you're drinking vodka at night, like you might be in trouble.
Yeah. There was an episode I watched recently from Lex Fridman. He was interviewing Facebook Meta AI chief engineer. I think it's a chief scientist over at Meta. Just Facebook Meta is the same thing. And they were talking about he was explaining the LLMs, which is basically what most of the AI products these
Large
days are,
language
most if
models or
not,
whatever.
yeah, large language models, which is basically what most, if not all, of AI, current AI is based on, basically speaking. And it was, I highly recommend for people, like, if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it to check it out. I think his name is LeCun, LeCun, the guy he was interviewing. Very interesting interview in terms of understanding what are the limitations of the large language models and how basically the polar opposite they are to how human brain is learning. Like they're learning in the opposite direction, you know? Like humans
Yeah.
learn from visuals and this is creating visuals from language. And the kind of logic of the language is actually sort of like a very slow IO and very limited in terms of how much stuff it can produce versus visuals are vastly more, you know, what do you call it? Complex
Well, like
and can
there's
create.
like the infinite resolution to an
Yeah.
analog image, right?
Yeah. 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 So super, super interesting interview. Very technical. It goes astray in a couple of moments, but very interesting kind of, it makes me, it makes me feel like that everything AI related these days is at least like fake jewelry. You know what I mean? It's like if like you're not gonna be able to tell if it's real or not. And someone's like, "Oh my God, look at my diamonds." But the moment you tell them like those are fake diamonds, it's like, "Oh, that's worthless." It's like most people who have fake diamonds and they realize they have fake diamonds, unless they're like ultimate grifters, they'll be like, "Why would I wear this? Like, this is worthless." You know what I mean?
Well,
And I feel like AI is very similar.
I have a $60 gold Casio, which I don't believe is real gold, so
But that's more of an old school statement, you know. Like I've had similar, not gold, it was silver Casio when I was growing up, and it's kind of a nostalgia.
It's sixty
Before I let you
euros
go,
to be accurate,
60 euros. All right, cool. Before I let you go, I need to ask you about your collab with Hamilton. How did I fucking land it on your lap? Like what? Because when I saw like. Because you designed his helmet, and then I know you designed a livery. I think it was a livery for a bike, for like I think it was a
then I did
VR64 or
for
40,
VR
46.
46.
Yeah.
Valentino Rossi's team. I guess Lewis just followed me on Instagram, and one day I was scrolling Instagram. Oh no, one day I was watching British Bake Off at my parents' house during the pandemic, or it could have been Taskmaster. It was some British reality TV show during the pandemic, and I was so bored that I was scrolling through my followers on Instagram looking for verified followers. And this is not something I normally do. I was just like supremely pandemic bored, and I was just like, who's this person? Who's this person? And then I saw Lewis Hamilton followed me, and then I sent him a DM, and then the rest is history. And then we just linked up and did that. And I'm
That's crazy, dude.
still tight with the Mercedes F1 team. They're really great company to work with. And so just might still have some tricks in the bag in the future. And then the VR46 one was really cool. Got to make the race liveries, got to make a helmet for Valentino and their racing suits, which were really fun to make. I love those things. And those projects are definitely the ones where I'm just like, these are just so fun and so exciting and just cool looking. And I don't know, there's just this it's like where my interests and my aesthetics and like my career, just the moon and the stars and the planets, they all just align in a moment, and you're just like, oh cool, like this is so fun and so like just kind of just cool, just a fun project to do. So really, really
Would you
excited
ever
when I get to do that
imagine,
kind of stuff.
like, I'm gonna fucking design a livery for a fucking winning team and a helmet for
No.
all-time greatest?
I think like when back, I don't know, when 2018, 19, like I remember talking with my manager and we were just kind of going over some goals, and it was always like, who do you want to work with? And it was always Lewis Hamilton and Daft Punk. So still working on Daft Punk, but at least
That
I got
ship
to work
might
with
have
Lewis.
sailed,
It
unfortunately.
seems it
Well, who
has, but
knows?
we'll see. I will accept them to return. If they so choose, I'll not hold it
Yeah,
against them.
that would be amazing.
But I'm not holding out. From what I understand, that's the way it is. I got to see them live once on the Alive tour, and that show absolutely changed my life and my view of music. So I think I'm grateful I got to see them live once. So that's I'll hold that as a special moment.
Yeah, that's one of my regrets not seeing them live for sure. I've got to see a lot of bands I grew up with live, like a lot of them. They're when I was seeing them live, they were already old people, by the way. But I at least I got to see them. Yeah, at least I was there. But yeah, it's definitely life changing. And yeah, it's like working with someone who's like, I want to work with them one day. Or someone like when you're growing up, admiring somebody, and then you end up working with them. You know, it's sometimes this kind of saying is like, never meet your heroes because you never know who they're gonna be like. You know, how they're gonna be like. But I honestly, I disagree with that statement because every hero I had that I ended up working with, it was an absolute blast, and they were like amazing people through and through. You know.
Yeah, never meet your heroes is kind of a defeatist kind of slogan.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know, it's like the there's a bunch of these I forget there was a couple of them we were talking about the other day, but like the jack of all trades, master of none. Like the full expression is like jack of all trades, master of none, but more often than not, many is better than one or something like that. And it's like the full expression is like the opposite of how we actually use it.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of those. There's another one that I can't remember it right now, but there's other ones like that too, where, you know, just because it's a catchy phrase doesn't make it you know,
It just
important or true.
sounds cool when you say it, you know?
Yeah.
All
Yeah.
right, dude. We can wrap it up here. It's been awesome to talk with you again. Like we've been hanging out on the NYC NFT for a bit. That was anywhere between 1 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And I still have I by the way before I go. One second. I still have this.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Sweet. I've got the signed tool poster upstairs.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I have this. I was thinking about hanging it up the wall, but I'll be moving, and then it's gonna definitely be on the wall,
Nice.
in the
Sweet.
new
Love it.
place. Yeah, it's one of those
I
things
got this
I have yours.
sorry, I got this the Slime
That's Slime
Sunday
Sunday.
poster. I stole it from his New York show off the wall. Because like he had all these
That's funny.
pieces printed up on the wall, and like he was talking to me, and he's like, "I really thought people were gonna like steal stuff. I didn't expect everything to still be here. I thought people were gonna mess with it more." And I was just like, "Say less," and I ripped it off the wall and jumped in my car and left. So I got to get that
That's
frame.
funny.
One day I want to get it signed by him, but it's still got like all the original like tape on it, and I had to like crumple it and like hide it in my shirt.
That's
So
funny.
yeah, so yeah, a couple of people were looking at me like, "What the fuck is that guy doing?" I just like ran out the door. But yeah, I had loose permission to steal that. But yeah, it's really cool getting to kind of have your friend's art in your life. So.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, I have my boy's Ash poster on this side
Nice. Yeah.
of the wall.
Yeah.
It's hanging there
Yeah.
from Epoch. It's a really good poster. I
Cool.
like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Love
always good. It's
Ash.
like
Love Ash.
great art. Yeah, he's great. Good friend. I mean, absolutely amazing artist. And but yeah, anyways. Good art.
Cool.
It's always just good to have good art around you, you know, and have it
Absolutely.
its own place in your, especially if you have a studio. If you can have a studio, surround yourself with like stuff that inspires you, you know, kind of reminders like, oh shit, yeah, that's why I'm doing it, you know. All right, man. Is
Good
there
art.
anything you want to plug in or talk
True,
about
true good
before?
art.
Yeah, you know, we started the podcast with this. Let's fucking end
If
with this. Make a
anybody is
full
just listening
circle.
to this audio, it's Tetsuo on a motorcycle with his arm on his leg, but it has a Gollum from Lord of the Rings head over Tetsuo's head. So it's like a
You're kid
big
bashing
head.
art.
Yeah, a kid. Yeah. Just go look at it on YouTube. Anything to plug? I'm talking at NFT NYC. I don't know if the date's set yet, but just look up my name. I don't know what
Is it like in
details of the
June?
project. No,
Is it like
that's
June?
in April. It's in a couple of weeks.
Oh shit, okay.
So I'm talking there in a couple of weeks. Gonna have something dropping there, and then yeah, I don't know what the allowed to talk about it levels are, but there will be something else dropping in the coming months. That
I guess you can say where can people can find
moves
information when you post
moves
about it.
moves moves things that move fast, things that move fast.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. That'll
So
be as vague as I'll go.
people just should follow you on Instagram and Twitter or X or whatever it's called now.
Mad.dog.jones on Instagram, mad underscore dog underscore Jones on Twitter. And yeah, Discord, whatever. Hit me up.
All right. We can wrap it up
Sweet.
here.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Matcha.
man. Always
Appreciate it.
awesome talking with you.